Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue joined the Soul Rebels live at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia on Saturday night. I spoke with Shorty about growing up in New Orleans, his lifelong friendship with John Batiste, and why he loves performing in the nation's capital. Hey, Trombone Shorty, hey, thanks so much for joining us on WTOP in DC.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Now, we're talking because Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue with the Soul Rebels are coming to the Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia this Saturday, March 2nd. I guess last summer, I think you played in our area down at Wolf Trap with Ziggy Marley, and we interviewed Ziggy. He was raving about your energy and your vibe, he said. But if folks saw you there at last summer at Wolf Trap, how would this year's show compare, the Shorty Gras? What would make it different than what they saw last summer?
I think we have this. Well, what makes it different is that we're celebrating Mardi Gras, and we got the Soul Rebels with us, and they're coming on stage with us and jamming, and we just see what happens from there. So it's just like we're playing in New Orleans in front of our people down there. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm happy to have them on the road, and we're just bringing a little bit of New Orleans Mardi Gras to the East Coast and wherever else we're going.
Absolutely. A little Mardi Gras, New Orleans flavor in West Virginia. And I know we're a DC station, but it's a general region. It's right over Virginia. It's close enough for us to cover it on the radio, baby. And speaking of you've come to actual DC proper, I think you've done the White House, what, like five times or something? You've done the National Christmas Tree Lighting with I guess it was the year of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I think. But what was it like? I mean, what's it like coming to these big ceremonies, especially with the Obamas? That must have been cool.
Yeah, it was wonderful. You know, I played it, like you say, about five or six times. The National Christmas Tree Lighting was very hard for me to play in that cold weather because of the brass, but we got through it, and it's always wonderful. But D.C. has always felt like a second home to me as far as the love and the excitement that I get from the audience and how many people come out since I've been coming up there. Going up there for a while. I don't know what it is, but I think D.C. having the go-go music, which is a regional thing up there, and we having the brass band and the brass music, it just feels like we're a perfect match culturally there. And it's been a wonderful place. I absolutely love playing in D.C. whenever I get a chance.
Great. And that's funny. I never thought about that in the cold at the tree lighting because, your hands on the trombone, I guess it kind of freeze to the brass.
Well, not my hands, my lips.
Oh, true.
My lips. I thought I was going to be like the guy off Dumb and Dumber when he was in Aspen, That's how I felt with my, it was just, it's very hard to play and stay in tune up there, but it was very difficult.
Thank you so much for quoting the Jeff Daniels in Dumb and Dumber. I love that movie. My mind went to A Christmas Story when he puts his tongue on the pole.
But you're,
it's the same thing. Well, but Jeff Daniels, the tongue stretches more in that
movie. That's right.
You were born in 86. I'm 84. So our touchstones are basically the same. We watched Dumb and Dumber growing up.
We sure did.
Oh man, all the way to Aspen. All right. Well, you weren't Aspen. You were born in New Orleans in 86 at Troy Andrews, the birth name. But I want to remind our listeners you had a pretty famous, at least musically inclined family. Like your grandpa Jesse Hill had an R&B hit, Oop Oop I Do. Your great uncle Walter Nelson played with Fats Domino. Your mom would do some of those, Grand Marshalling of the Second Line parades and stuff. So it was music just all around you, I guess. Like you probably never knew any other life other than just jazz, like all around you growing up, right?
Well, just New Orleans music in general. I started playing when I was very young, 4 years old, marching in the street parades, the brass band second lines that we do in New Orleans. And of course, my grandfather, he was basically almost retired by the time I was starting to play a little bit, but my brother learned a lot from him, and he would pass that knowledge down to us through my brother. I guess I was learning it from him. And my uncles, I didn't meet them. I was too late. I was born too late to meet them, but it's a long history. And but in my neighborhood, the Treme neighborhood, which is the home of the Rebirth Brass Band, Tuba Fast, the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, actually the Soul Rebels, some of their original members come from there. And we were just in a real musician village type of thing. And so music was always around me, not only in my house, but I can go around the corner and I can see people like Kermit Ruffins playing on the street, Shannon Powell. And as I got a little bit older, in my 10, 11, 12 years old, I started to be around the Neville Brothers a lot. So, and then there's of course, the Mardi Gras Indians that we have in New Orleans. So it's in New Orleans, is just full of music on mostly every street corner there. So, but in my particular neighborhood, the Treme neighborhood, there was no way not to escape music. Everybody played music, and it was the home of a lot of brass bands. So, there's some type of way that I would have been a part of music sometime, even if my family wasn't musically inclined. I would probably be a part of it because that was my surroundings.
Right, exactly. And you mentioned your older brother, I guess James, but I guess he was already on trumpet, so that's why you went to the trombone. Is that why?
Well, I think so. Plus, I'm sure that was probably one of the other only instruments that worked in the house besides the ones that was taken already. And he probably puts me to the trombone because every trumpet player in New Orleans has a sidekick trombonist. So
Gotcha.
you go way back in the times of Louis Armstrong, the trumpet was always the star, and then the trombone player would be the sidekick. And my brother, he likes to remind me I'm still the sidekick.
Well, it's trombone shorty, not trumpet shorty. I think you made a name for yourself. I wouldn't. This ain't no
Yeah.
sidekick. But Robin became Batman, baby.
Yeah.
But hey, did I
That's
read
right.
that? What like an eight? You're talking about growing up in the neighborhood, but did I see that at age four, Bo Diddley called you up on stage, invited you on stage at the New Orleans Jazz Heritage Festival at like in 1990, something like that? Age four.
Yeah, I was playing with my brother's band. We were doing the parade segment, the second line segment of the jazz festival during that time, and my mom promised me to get a snowball, which is a snow cone everywhere else, but New Orleans is a snowball, and we were going to find it in the jazz festival. And I was just playing this high trombone note, whatever it was, as a kid. And I think Bo Diddley, he heard that note, and my mom said that he would say, who is that stepping on my set? And she was telling me, you can't do that. People are playing, you can't do it. And the crowd lift me up and crowd surfed me to the stage, took me from my mom, crowd surfed me to the stage. And there's a popular picture of me with him bending over me and just watching me play. I don't think I was playing much, but I was able to get some sound out of it. And that's how that happened.
That's so cool. Well, yeah, I guess the crowd, I mean, when you're 4 years old, a little easier to pass up to the stage than a grown ass man. But
Yeah.
that's so cool. And then I want to remind our listeners, as you get older and are starting to pursue it a little more, you attend the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, and wasn't John Batiste was there with you at the same time? I know you guys later, a couple years ago, reunited with what was it? We Are, his Grammy-winning album. You were on that. But what was it like going to school with John? Were you two of you fast friends?
Yeah, well, we like family, and we talk every other day for like literally I talked to him probably last week for a few minutes, and my days are all mixed up. It could have been 2 days ago, but we grew up together since we were probably around 11 years old. We met each other, and he was actually my first keyboard piano player in my group and in this band. He helped me start the band Orleans Avenue. And he played with us up until he went up into Juilliard, and and New York. And since then, we've been playing and jamming with each other for many years. You know, some of it is recorded, some of it is not. And then we did the We Are record together. He called me and asked me, can I play on it? And I sent it back either the same night or the next morning. And but he's a brother of mine. We just hung out a little bit at the Grammys earlier this month.
Yeah.
And it's been, I'm so proud of him and everything that he's doing. But it was wonderful because we would challenge each other. We would challenge each other to get better. Even though he played a piano and I'm playing the horns, the language is still the same. So he would play something to me and I would have to play it back to him, and I would play something to him and he would play it back to me. And just a couple of months ago when he came to New Orleans, we hung out at the studio and we talked for a little minute, and then we fell right back into the old habits of playing just he and I for many hours.
I love this. I guess I never realized that you guys were such good friends. For you know, you guys got, you mentioned Dumb and Dumber. You and John Batiste need to wear the blue and the orange tuxes one day.
Yeah, we do. We do, maybe for Halloween. But yeah, we go way back. I mean, all the way back. Like, blood couldn't make us any closer.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Well, remind our listeners too, didn't you play in Lenny Kravitz's horn section for a while? Like the Aerosmith tour, like that. How much did that cut your teeth?
Well, you know, coming from New Orleans, I think up until that point, the biggest thing I probably did was play at the jazz festival with the Neville Brothers. They were probably the biggest act I can think about at that time and the biggest crowd. So when I finished high school in 04, a couple of months later, 05, right before Katrina happened, I had joined Lenny's band a couple of months before that. And I was always interested into the funk and because of my time with the Neville Brothers and my brother spending time with Dr. John and Alan Toussaint and the Meters and people like that. I was always more interested in that type of music. And my brother had a funk group that he started to do some funk things, and I would play with him. And so that was in my blood and feeling it. And when I got with Lenny, I was already interested in rock and everything. I would listen to Nine Inch Nails and the Red Hot Chili Peppers while I was at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts. I was supposed to be listening to something else for assignment, but it didn't move me. That type of stuff did, Earth, Wind & Fire and all of that. And when I got with Lenny, it was just, I mean, if I was going to approach funk rock, what better teacher can I ask for than him? And I just studied him every night, and we still work together. We just did a song for the movie Rustin.
Yeah.
The closing title, you know, that we just did. But
Coleman Domingo, baby, great performer. He's up for an Oscar next week.
Yeah, he's up for an Oscar. Congratulations to him. And, you know, just watching him, I think my first show with him was in Mexico City in front of about 80,000 people in a big arena, and I just watched and studied the way that he approached the stage and how much rehearsing we did. And I can say that I knew that I would be a professional musician, but I didn't know how I would approach the stage and how I would approach the music if it wouldn't have been for that experience with Lenny. And you can see a lot of resemblance in me when I'm performing because of my studying of him and him being a mentor to me.
Oh yeah, Lenny Kravitz, the real deal, man. That's a he's an artist, artist. Hey, you mentioned real quick. You mentioned Hurricane Katrina. Didn't you do like a benefit album? And then you also you helped reopen the Superdome, like a Monday Night Football thing with was it U2 and Green Day? I think.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do a benefit album. I think we played on a album that was. Okay. I think it was an album that we did a tribute to. Fats Domino, and maybe some of the contributions went to a charity or something like that. Actually, it was me, Lenny. It was me, Lenny, and James Brown original horn section with the Reaper Brass Band on that song. A Whole Lot of Loving, Fats Domino song. And we did do the reopening of the Superdome for the Saints game with Green Day and U2. That's right, along with the Reaper Brass Band and Newbert Brass Band.
Wow, I mean, you've done it all. Football games, NBA All-Star game, you've done it all. But I wanted to, you know, before we run, I wanted to talk about how sort of your music career sort of opened doors to do other stuff, like even on TV and movies and things. Like, not only, you know, every late night show known to man, but like scripted stuff like Aaron Sorkin's Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip and David Simon's Treme, you know, which was your, you know, childhood neighborhood. Like, what was it like getting to act in? I mean, that's the guy that freaking made The Wire, man, and you're acting, you know, he's coming to your neighborhood. I mean, what was it like getting to act? Do you like TV?
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. You know, it's just I'm thankful for the discipline that myself and John was taught at NOCA, practicing and different things. So when I got to do the acting thing, I just had to really, you know, I was really being myself, but I just had to remember the lines, and that took a lot of practice. But as I did it, kept doing it, I became more comfortable with it. But it's a fun, different avenue to do. It was a lot of fun. And David Simon, he wants to get it right and make it feel as authentic as it could possibly be. So he got people from the neighborhood that never acted a day in their life and never even thought about it, and got them to do it. And that's how you get that authentic feeling from it. So when I see the people that they just were like, hey, how about you say these lines? And that just gave me more confidence to do it. And it was a lot of fun to be able to do that.
Maybe that's you mentioned you just feel you can't an inexplicable connection to DC. Maybe it's there's some ties there somehow, because David Simon was, you know, he's born in DC. And then, of course, all his shows were Baltimore. So, yeah, maybe there's some connection there. I don't know.
I think there's some type of connection that we got. Like I tell you, DC is one of those places for me, and the love and the feeling and the excitement, it feels like home all the time.
It's a vibe, man. Final few minutes here. I want to talk about sort of like a whole new generation of young ones. You know, you and I are beside pretty much the same age, but like, you know, a whole the newer generation probably knows you from like a bunch of stuff, like the Princess and the Frog song that Oscar nominated down in New Orleans. You played on that, a Disney movie, the Caldecott Medal for your children's book. You even got a Sesame Street Muppet, I think, created after you. What's it like, you know, being able to pass it down to the next generation? Is that sort of something important to you with these Disney movies and stuff?
Well, it's very important, because it's an unspoken tradition in New Orleans. You know, that's the same thing that happened to me musically from some of the older musicians that passed down the tradition to me without, you know, just being there. And that's just what we do. You know, that's just a part of the culture there, that we do that. We're not taught to do that. That's just what we see. It's just a natural instinctive thing that we do. And it's been a wonderful thing to be able to reach the younger generation, because I have a lot of people now come to the show with their kids, that their kids brought home my children's book. And their kids actually taught them about me. So they bring their kids to my show. Like, I'm talking about 4, 5 years old, 7 years old. And it's just an amazing thing. And to be able to be an inspiration to the young ones and let them know that they can do anything that they put their mind to, especially through music, and get them involved in the arts. But the funny thing is, when I meet some of them, if they haven't watched YouTube of me or anything, when I meet some of them, they seem a bit disappointed, because I'm not the kid in the book. I'm an old man to them.
We thought you were gonna be shorty. Yeah, no, you're an old man now.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. You're not. I'm like, that's me. I just grown up now. But yeah, there's a lot of kids that's gotten that book and read the story, and they tag me on Instagram, and You know, I saw a really cute thing of one kid. He actually did sleep with his trombone or saxophone, one of those instruments. But it's just wonderful, you know, to be able to reach those kids and give them some inspiration.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. He's three dimensional. I thought he was two dimensional on a, you know, a picture book. He's not animated. What's going on?
That's right. That's
right. Everyone look into the Trombone Shorty Foundation, helping high schoolers too. Like, you're always giving back to the next generation. That's great. Well, hey, you've been generous with your time. Final question. I read that you said that the song I'm Standing Here would be your wrestling theme entrance. WWE dude, to say nothing of the current controversies, and we're not going to go into all that, but why is that the theme? Or I guess my better question would be, like, who's your guy, who was your you know, it was it Stone Cold or The Rock, or
we're about the same age. I was a WCW guy.
Oh, you were with the Bischoff. You were NWO.
Yeah, NWO. Too sweet for life. That's right.
Rest in peace, Scott Hall. Razor Ramon.
Rest in peace, Scott Hall. That's right. And actually, in a few days, when I'm finished, before I go home, I'm actually going to go to see Sting's last match. That'll be the ending of my era, for real. So I wanted to go check him out. But Standing Here, it just sounds like that type of entrance thing. Like, if the lights went out and that guitar, I mean, you could hear the people going crazy if I was a wrestler. But one of my favorite wrestlers was Goldberg.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And I actually got a chance to meet him and hang out with him. And that was major for me. The childhood, Troy. I mean, I still go back and watch some of those matches. That was a big part of my upbringing.
You should have speared him and jackhammered him.
Oh, my God. Well, I got to put on a little bit more weight.
Well, maybe hit him with the trombone, like, what was it, Jeff Jarrett did with the guitar all the time. You could use
I think
trombone.
We could do that, yeah. Now, I can do that. I might be able to get him with a small spear, but...
AEW needs to be listening to this interview, invite you to one of their events, or they should have you over to WrestleMania. Like, I feel like you need to do a appearance somewhere.
Yeah, I got my man, what is his name, Austin Creed. He plays the trombone with New Day, right?
Oh, yeah, there you go, New Day with Kofi, and isn't Big E's been out with, like, a neck injury, right?
Yeah, I don't think he can, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to wrestle, or he might have to slow it down a little bit. They got to tag me in. Yeah, I could take over for a Big E for a few minutes.
I love it. Well, hey, man, this has been so much fun. We're talking wrestling and Dumb and Dumber. We've covered the gamut here, so I really, really appreciate it. Everybody, come on out to Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia this Saturday, March 2nd. You might hear some stuff from his Grammy-nominated album, Back of Town. You might hear Made in New Orleans stuff with New Breed Brass Band. You never know what you're going to hear, but you got to come out. Trombone Shorty.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, thank you so much. This was fun.
Hey, man, this is one of the fun ones. I appreciate you, and it put a smile on my face. Thank you.
All right. Well, you're always welcome here in D.C. I mean, rock West Virginia first, but we can't wait to have you back in the nation's capital as well.
Looking forward.
All right. Later, man.
Later.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.